Okay. While you're just finishing those forms off, I'll just tell you what it is that I do. So I'm Stephen Blake. I use the letters MBA after my name, not relevant to what I do now, but mainly to make it different from any other Stephen Blake. So if you were to go and Google and tap Stephen Blake, there's thousands of them. And if you tap Stephen Blake MBA, there's three pages of me. Okay, so that's why I use it. I've studied positive thinking for about 30 years now, and a few years ago, I was helping people lose weight, particularly by selling the Cambridge Diet Plan. And I noticed that some people, even though it was an absolutely brilliant diet, some people just couldn't stick to it. They did really well, and then they would disappear for 18 months, and then they'd come back and they'd got all the weight back plus a pound. Because when you lose weight and you get it, next diet, you've always got an extra pound that you need to lose. And so I wanted to find out how the brain worked and how to deal with things on a better level. Because I was pretty sure that there was something behind it that people, why people were self-sabotaging as I saw it. And that's when I studied NLP, hypnotherapy, and then I've studied energy and motion. And energy and motion is the opposite of NLP and hypnosis in the fact that when we have thoughts and feelings, we tend to trap them in the body somehow. We sort of trap that energy in and we tense places up and it tightens up. And the two things are connected to each other. You can't have one without the other. And when we have a state of, oh, I'm worried or whatever, we tense up in a certain way. If we can't tense up, we actually can't bring the worry on. It's really strange. And when I have people with particular problems, if I say, right, just bring on the state that you came to get removed, and they go into this sort of frightened state or whatever, if I go up and just move their arm, they can't actually stay in that frightened state. It's really weird. So energy in motion does it the other way around. It actually untraps the blockage of energy in the body so the brain can release it. And the other two things I do, you release it from the brain and releases it from the body. So in the main, all I do is I help people with their thought processes because it's our thought processes that are behind everything that we do. And typically, I can help people overcome the main thing in their life. Because I don't like to deal with just the symptoms. So if you come along with a particular problem and you've got seven others, I don't just look at that problem and then come back to the other seven at different sessions. I'll actually look at the thread that runs between all of your problems. And the answer is usually a lack of self-worth. It's there every time. And I'd like to say in 99.9% cases, that's it. But I haven't had one yet that didn't amount to somewhere there was a lack of self-worth or lack of self-love. And so that's why today's talk is about love and joy, because it's about enabling the love and joy that you have to come out and actually getting more and more of it. And you're all up for that, aren't you? Good, that's why you're here. Okay, if anybody's been to any of my talks before, I will follow certain threads because there's certain things you need to know before you can understand what you're dealing with. But every talk I give is entirely different, regardless of title, and I just flow wherever it flows. If you have a question and you're a bit stuck with what I've just told you or you don't understand it, I'm quite welcome to ask a question. If I'm in full flow, though, I don't particularly know where I'm going next, and sometimes it just stops my train of thought. So if it's something you can wait until the end and ask me, that's great. But if you are stuck in that moment and it's like, it's like building stones, isn't it? If you don't get on the first one and understand that you can't actually step onto the next one. So I don't want anybody to get lost. I want you to all follow where I'm taking you with this. Okay? So here we go. Love and joy. Love and joy, I connect together. They're just so similar. And if you ask anybody what they want out of life, the end question, if you keep asking them over and over and over again, will always end up with love and joy. Because, what do you want to do when you get older? I want to be famous. Well, what do you want to be famous for? I want to be rich. Well, I want to be rich. And it always ends up, well, I want to be happy. Okay. And lots of the things that we think we need to be happy, we don't. So because it's February now, in January this year, I noticed everybody talking about setting goals. And setting goals is a strange thing. Everybody talks about it like it's some mystical thing that we can do. And sometimes it's not actually helpful, because we set these massive goals, and then we tend to either not think of how we're going to get there, which is fine, or we tend to plan every single step of the way. And so when we get one or two steps down there and it's not actually going how we thought, that's the point when we give up and we go, well, I'm never going to get there anyway, so I don't. And you know, 99.9% of all New Year's resolutions never stay. And gym memberships shoot up and they make their profit from everybody who's never going to turn up again. Otherwise, gyms will be absolutely full and nobody could get in them. So I worked out that actually while you're in the now, while you're in this moment and you go, in the future, I want this. What you're actually saying is, well, now I like the idea of having that in the future. But you must want it now, because now is when you're thinking about it. So if you actually say, well, I want to be happy in 10 years' time, what you're actually saying is, I don't want to be happy for 10 years, and then I'll become happy. Wouldn't that be nice? But that means you want it now. Actually, you wouldn't be thinking about it now. You'd be thinking about it in year 9 and wanting it the following year. Right. So you must want to be happy and joyous now. And that's why you're all here. Come on in, take a seat. No problem. So life is always about now. You are in this moment that is here now. Everything you've ever done in your life has led you to be here today. Left and right turns. And when you know, if you took a right turn to turn in here today and you took a left turn instead, you wouldn't be here, would you? So the one thing I always do with my therapy clients is I want you to accept that you are where you are now. Right? And I don't just mean this room. I mean your current circumstances, your health, your love life, your financial status, the whole thing. I want you to accept it as it is now. Wait the whole lot. Right? I'm not telling you to like it. I want you to accept it, that you are where you are now. Okay? And the reason I'm saying that is, if you go to a different town or a city for a nice break, and you end up in the middle of the town and you don't know the place, you always end up in front of one of these massive maps, and it has a little arrow on it that says, you are here, and then you look at all the places you want to visit, and then you know that if you set off from there, you go down there and turn right and you'll end up at this place you want to go to. But if some idiot came up and for a joke just covered up that you are here sticker and put it somewhere else, you would now think you're down here. And so you'd set off up here to turn right to get where you want to. You will never, ever get to where you want to if you don't accept that you're here now. Are you all with me? Are you all accepting that you are here now? Okay? So on that basis then, that you are here now in the circumstances that you're in with all the learning that you've ever had. And I came across something the other day when I was interviewed the other night for a broadcast. And somebody said about, if you are in dire circumstances or an anxiety or something that you've had all your life that really bothered you, that this was the sort of test for you, and the learning was coming from being in those circumstances. And I could get where they were coming from, but that's totally rubbish. If we have circumstances that challenge us and then we get over them and we learn the right lesson from them, then it does change us, and it usually changes us to be a better person. If you go through terrible circumstances, you then have compassion for other people with similar circumstances. If you float through life and it just everything's beautiful and you always have money and everything else, you don't understand somebody who can't make money or who can't get a job or whatever. But that's not the learning process. If you're trapped in something that is part of your thought processes, so if you have an overall anxiety that you've had for all your life, that is not teaching you a lesson. That is that you've learnt the wrong lesson. Because to get anxiety, how it starts is, anxiety to me is something happens when you're a child. I take people back in time to when the first event of anything happened to them. Anything that brought on this terrible feeling that they have. And when I get them back there, and it's usually around the age of six, something happens and the way that they dealt with it at the time, it either frightened them so much or they were angry for the first time over and the chemicals that flooded through the body actually overwhelmed them. And in that split second of being in this, oh my God, what's happening? And you're too young to actually rationalise it. Your unconscious mind that tries to protect you says, I don't want you to ever feel this way again. What are we going to do that's going to sort of stop it happening again? And it makes a program up that you then have for the rest of your life. And that program is called being anxious. So, anxious. So your anxiety is literally, it keeps you on hyper alert. So you're looking round. So this thing that happened to you, if you spot the signs of it happening again, you might get enough advance notice that you can duck. Right? If it's somebody that hit you in the back of the head, it's going, well, if I watch out for this next time, I'll watch them getting angry and angry and angry. And just at the point where they're going to hit me at the back of the head, I can duck. Right? And that's what anxiety is for the rest of your life. It's this looking round going, something bad's going to, I just know something bad's going to happen. I don't know what it is. Right? And that's all anxiety is. And yet you can have it for 30, 40, 50 years. And literally I've taken it off people in 3 to 5 hours. And it just changes their life. And because they've lived with it all their life, they can't understand life without it. And because their unconscious gave them it as a protective system, it's a bit wary of letting go of this protective system. Because it's saying, well, look, if I stop you being vigilant, that thing is going to hit you at the back of the head. So I have to break through this safety barrier. And it's like a safety barrier for your safety barrier. So it's put this thing in place and it's saying this will keep you safe, and it has done for the rest of your life, until now. The trouble is it's so annoying. Who wants to live their life in this anxiety of things are going to be wrong? And it's why we do sabotage on ourselves. If we think we're not worthy, we actually sabotage ourselves all the time. And that helps to prove that we're not worthy. Because if we can mess something up, then we can go, yeah, I knew I'd do that, I always mess up. Right? And if you have that thing running in your head, I always mess up, your unconscious listens to you all the time. It's listening all the time, but it doesn't understand negatives. So when you say, I always mess up, it goes, oh, you'd like to mess up, would you? Okay, I can help you mess up. And then it actually makes you feel better when you do mess up. Because when something goes really well, you're waiting for it to mess up, aren't you? You can't actually enjoy the thing that's working because you go, well, this is only temporary because it'll mess up soon. You're actually saying, I would like to mess up soon to prove that I really am not worthy. It's a terrible thing. And yet we just get locked into that and we don't realise there's a way out. And in fact, up till now, there hasn't been a way out of it. It's just that modern science can now examine the brain and actually see what's happening when you're thinking and doing things, that now we can trace these things down to what happens. And it's usually a one-off instance. And even if you have a chain of things that prove that you're not worthy, or you've been a victim, or you've had ill health or whatever, it usually starts off with one thing that turns you into the victim. And as a victim, you're more likely to get picked on. You're more likely to mess up your immune system. Because when you sabotage anything, you sabotage the whole thing. Right? And even our immune system, it's listening to you all the time. It can hear you and it can do things to help you, or it can carry on in that mode of making you the victim still. Whichever it thinks you want, it's an amazing thing. Your unconscious can do this. And the talk today is about it can also do the reverse. This is the wonderful thing about it. It can do the exact opposite, but you have to tell it. So everything we know about life, we've learned at some stage. So some things we were born with, so we knew how to eat and drink and poo and the blood and everything knows how to go around your body. All those things were programs we were born with. Every program since then is a program that you have installed. Right? Nobody else to blame for it. Right? Accept total responsibility that every program since then you've installed. But 80% of all the programs you've installed since then, you did before you were 6 years old. Right? So although I want you to take responsibility for everything about the way you are, some of it is a small child that's still operating you. Okay? The great news is you can overcome that small child once you realise that that's what's happening. You just have to let go of the idea that you deserve to suffer. Nobody deserves to suffer. We weren't put on the planet to suffer. Suffering is a small part of life that we learn from. If we don't learn from it, we continue with it. You don't have to carry on suffering throughout your life. There's no program there. There's no great designer. You know, I don't know your religious beliefs, but whatever your religious beliefs are, no God on the who rules this planet wants you to have a miserable life. There's just none of that, okay? So the only person that can keep you away from joy and happiness is you, by running a very old program. Now, the thing is that your unconscious runs the programs. And it runs it at 100 times the speed of your conscious operating. So when you get into that mode where you suddenly go anxious, something has triggered it off that's not conscious yet. Right? You've smelt perfume that your Auntie Doris, who used to hit you around the back of the head, as used to wear. Something's happened and you go into that mode of, oh, last time I was in circumstances like this, it was terrible. And you're not consciously aware of what's done that. Or if you suffer from depression, when you go into a depressed state, the doctor will say it's a chemical imbalance. And then they'll give you tablets to actually make up for the chemical that you're not making. Well, isn't that rubbish? Why wouldn't you want to give people or find out why they're not making the right chemical? Wouldn't that be a better one to do? Wouldn't it be better to give them a tablet that made them make the right chemical? Right? Rather than just giving the chemical that's missing? Wouldn't you want to find out why they're not making it? And in depressed people, it's thinking too much. There are no stupid depressed people. Depressed people are quite smart, intelligent, clever people who think too much. And when they do, they think about all the things that they can't change. The current state of the world, we all get more depressed when there's all these wars or about to be wars or whatever. They're all out there and we see pictures of starving children and places blown up and things like that. And that gets us down because there's nothing we can do about it. But if there's nothing we can do about it, we also shouldn't be getting into a depressed state about it. There's lots of joy in the world. We don't actually go noticing all that and going, well, I'll have a bit of that joy. That'd be really nice. And if you notice the news, there's no such thing as good news, is there? Or they'll give you like an hour of death and destruction, death and destruction. By the way, they've launched this new film. And it goes, wow. Okay. So it's what we concentrate on, we actually bring into our lives. Whatever we think about, Your unconscious is aware of what you're thinking about. And so whatever you think about, it will try and get for you. So I want you to think about an issue in your life at this very moment. You can make it whatever you like. I normally say make it something quite shallow, but just think of a problem that you've got at the moment, okay? And just think of how you... I'm not going to ask you to tell me, or you can if you like, but I'm not going to ask you to say it out loud. So I want you to think of one sentence that you would tell me of the problem that's in your life. Okay? Have you all got that? And when you think about that, just think if you're concentrating on getting the solution to it, or you're actually concentrating on the problem. Okay, how many people were concentrated on the solution? Nobody. So the more you think about that problem, the more it becomes a problem. So if you go to bed at night and you've done loads of things in the day and you've got all these things that need sorting out and you've got to remember them, and I've got a problem, I've got a problem, I've got a problem. If you do get to sleep, all that will happen is your unconscious will keep rehearsing, you've got a problem, you've got a problem, you've got a problem. And when you wake up in the morning, it'll go, hey, don't forget, you've got a problem. Or loads of them, right? So there's another way around this, is to do the exact opposite. If you do have something that you need to work out the answer to, you can think about it before you go to bed, but phrase it in a different way. So, does anybody want to volunteer that one sentence that they can tell me? And I'll tell you the opposite. Okay. Your back is aching. Right, okay. So your back is aching. Would you like your back to continue aching? Okay, so if you were to phrase it entirely different, what would that sentence be? Exact opposite of that.
The muscles in my back are relaxed.
Okay. Because if you just say my back is not aching, you're still talking about a back aching and the unconscious wouldn't recognise the not. So you've skipped straight away to where I want you to go to, which is, what's the opposite? Well, it's relaxed and it's calm. So how long have we got?
When you say unconscious, do you mean subconscious?
Right. I will use the word unconscious for something you would know as the subconscious. I'm very deliberate in not calling it the subconscious, because sub means under the conscious. Your conscious is, if it was valued in pounds, your conscious is worth about 10 quid. Your unconscious is worth millions of pounds, right? Your conscious is capable of working on 8 bits of data at any one time. Your unconscious mind has 100 trillion data points that can work all together in any combination. It's absolutely unlimited in what it does. So when you call it the subconscious, it's not very helpful for the work I do, because I work with the unconscious and I treat it like it's... Sorry?
You could educate people that, because unconscious
is completely different. Right. You'll find that hypnotherapists use it a lot and not many other people do it. So yes, thank you for pulling me up on that. Yes, so I call it the unconscious because there's things we are consciously aware of and things we are unaware of. So unaware, unconscious. Okay. So it's the bits you're not conscious of, but still work. So your unconscious is doing hundreds of thousands of things in every moment. And if you give it an extra job, it just does it. We all know if at work that we give somebody who's fairly lazy and doesn't seem to have much on a job to do, it's less likely to get done than give it to the person who's doing 100 jobs at the same time, and we give them this extra job and they go, yeah, okay, I'll get it done. And the other one will say, I'll try, right? And try is a terrible word, because try actually means I'll nearly do it, but I won't quite. It's this sort of, I'm going to fail at it, but I'll give it a go, and then nobody can blame me for it, right? So when somebody says, yeah, I'll try, you just know you might as well not bother. But we do that all the time. Oh, I tried. And so you have to watch out for this self-sabotage bit of, am I deliberately doing this, or am I setting myself up with something that's such a big project that I can't possibly win at it? But at least then I can say, well, I gave it a good go. I nearly got there. But nobody could have done it, because you'd have to be superhuman to do it. So I'm really good to have got this far. All right? But you've still failed. Whereas if you actually set yourself the target of here and you get there, you've won. You can't cope with that because you've set yourself up to keep saying, I'm not very good at anything. Oh, I'm not very good. Many years ago, I ran courses to help people go self-employed. And I helped about 700 people go into business. I also helped about 700 people not go into business because they would have failed at it. And they were able to find out that during the length of my course. But I interviewed nearly 2,000 people in all to go on this course. And about 800-900 of them were women. And the women that came to see me always undervalued their own worth. They would apologise for the qualifications they'd got, and the guys would come along and brag about something that they hadn't got. So a great explanation of the difference between the two was, a young woman came on a course, probably mid-20s, and she said, oh, will you let me on the course because I've only got a master's degree in marketing? And I said, I've only got a certificate and I'm teaching it. And she obviously came on the course. A young lad came along and I said, well, we cover marketing and various other things. And he said, oh, I know all about marketing. I won't need to do that bit. And I said, oh, so what have you done? He said, my uncle's got a market stall. That was his idea of marketing. So since then, I've always gone along with this impression of, I mean, it's not every woman, it's not every guy, but I've always allowed for the bullshit element for guys, and anything a guy tells me, I knock 20% off, and anything a woman tells me, I add 20% too, because she'll downvalue her own worth. And this is why I do what I do, because...
Isn't it instinct for a woman to do that, to build a bridge and a bond with other women and not actually...
It doesn't matter why they do it so much. It's because they're constantly telling themselves and others that they're not worth it, they eventually believe it. Because everything we learn usually is by repetition. So when we learn to walk, we do all sorts of steps of getting there. At no point does your mother ever pick you off the floor and go, you've fallen over 3 times today, this walking is not for you. Don't bother again, right? We just keep doing things until we can do it. And so if you keep repeating something over and over again, even if it's not true, eventually the unconscious gives in and it goes, okay, you keep telling me you're not worthy. Okay, let's run you on that circumstance that you're not worthy. And it does. Other things like the anxiety or like a phobia, you learn in one lesson. When you get a, like a spider phobia, it's because at some point the spiders appeared at the same time as something else traumatic happened, or your mother screamed, or somebody screamed and fainted at the same time and pointed the spider and made it into this big dramatic thing. So suddenly this spider is not this little thing on the wall anymore, it's this massive thing that eats you. Right? And you learn that in one session, and you learn anxieties in one session, and sometimes you learn lack of self-worth in one session because somebody you care for tells you or proves to you that you're not worth it. But it's continuing to believe that traps you in that lack of self-worth. So when I help people over anxiety, it literally goes. It goes in that instant. And I'll be working with them for 3 to 5 hours. And there's like a 10-minute window of I catch on what's happened. And in that 10 minutes of me then trying to explain to them what happened, that it feels quite bad for them because they realise they're going to have to let go of the safety blanket. But after that 10 minutes, it's like a switch goes off and these people just change. I wish I could video that instant. It would be wonderful. And people get taller and the face changes and expression comes back to them and everything else. It's just the most wonderful of things. But it's instant and it's permanent. Because once you realise something isn't true, your brain cannot hold it in the same place. And it rewires your brain. It doesn't mean that suddenly you'll be full of confidence and everything else, because it's a bit like a muscle that you build up. Confidence is a muscle you keep doing over and over again. You keep doing things and then you get better at it. And then eventually you know you're good at it. But most people here today, I mean, are you good? Do you know you're good at anything? Even though you are. Is anybody here good at something? Okay. Anybody not here, not good at anything? You're not going to admit it now, are you? But it's all about our thought processes. So, right, I'll get into love and joy. And if you'd like to come see me on my stand, I will see if I can turn the pain off in your back. Okay? Or if we have time at the end of this, I'll show you a quick demo how you can turn pain off. Okay? Free. Okay, love and joy. We're born with love and joy. See children playing, and even when they fall out with each other, 2 minutes later they're fine. Right? For a minute it looks like they're going to kill each other, and then after that they're playing like nothing's happened at all. They forgive each other, everything. They're just in that moment. They're in the frustration of the moment, they're in the joy of the moment, everything's in that moment. We only ever live in the now. We've only got this moment now. We don't know what's going to happen in a minute's time. We know what happened a minute before. And this is the trouble, that we tend to go by what we've done before as a measure of what will happen in the past. I have dealt with so many people of when I say, right, go to a happy time in your life, they can't find one. I get so upset with that. They actually can't find a happy time in the past. And I can't imagine a life where you can't find any happy time in the past. That must be horrendous. And so I have to work on getting rid of what stopped them from being happy to get them to the point where I can actually talk about happy and get them to visualise it and imagine it and everything else. But without losing that bit that's dragging you into the past. So the past is only there to learn the lessons. And as I said during this interview, this guy said, you know, well, you have to put up with suffering because that teaches you a lesson. It's taught you the wrong lesson if you're suffering. If you suffer in the moment, something happens that's traumatic, you lose somebody or you say the wrong thing or something happens that you totally regret, to feel sad in that moment is sensible. To feel sad 20, 10, 20, 30, 40 years later and have dragged your life down to the point where you can't feel happy, that's not a lesson. You've learnt the wrong lesson. Right? So as soon as you go back and learn the right lesson, right, this is what happened. I shouldn't have done that. How will I not repeat this in the future? Or I was abused. Was I at fault? You know, I've taken people back to the age of 3 when they were sexually abused and they feel guilty. They feel guilty for being abused. Because the abuser obviously gives them some sort of stupid excuse about, well, you were looking pretty in your dress today or something. Right? And so when they're 43, 40 years later, and they're still feeling guilty about somebody raping them when they were 3, that is not a lesson anybody needs to carry with them, right? The lesson is that was a bad person. Right? And if you've been fortunate that nothing like that's happened since, that's a very rare thing to happen. And it's very unfortunate you were the one at that time. And the only lesson to be learned is that that was a bad person. And there are some bad people about. But you'll know how to look out for it in the future. That's the only lesson that need come to. You didn't need 40 years of self-sabotage to bring you to here. Right. So, whatever's in your past, I want you to think about it and deal with it. Because as soon as you learn what the lesson is from it, you can throw it away. And you can keep the learning from it and throw whatever it was that bothered you. Now, although I deal with a lot of people who have been abused and things like that, I also deal with people where I take them back, and when they get to here and you show them what it is, they laugh out loud and say, is that all it bloody was? And it's something really trivial. But it wasn't when they were six. It was really way out, frightening or horrifying, or made them so angry that they couldn't control themselves. And in that moment, they just didn't want it to happen again. So if you need to, go back and look at things and learn the lesson from it, but then you can let go of it. About one in four of everybody I see, when I take them back to the time, and I can get them back to the year that it happened, or the age they were when it happened, and one in four, it won't show them what it is. And that's because it frightened them at the time. It doesn't want to show them again and frighten them again. And so I give the unconscious mind two alternatives then. I go, well, either you will show them what it is, and then we can deal with it, or you will throw it away, because if you're never going to show them what it is because it frightened them, how are they ever going to learn from it? So I just want you to throw it away without them seeing it. And it does. Right. So there's ways around it, whatever you do. So, love and joy, that's what you've come here about today. And love and joy we're born with. That's one of these preconditioned things. And we are full of love and joy when we're younger. And you've only got to see a small child. If we have a small child in here now, running around, just screaming with joy and things, you can't help but join in with it. And that's the bit we need to look for, is that the more we give it out, strangely, it keeps coming back to us. And it comes back more than what we gave out. So you keep giving it out, love and joy. You give it out all the time. It doesn't necessarily come back from the person you give it to. So if you've got a partner that's not very appreciative of things, well, it's not a great example of it coming back. But if you give it out to everybody you meet, you cannot help but have more of it at the end of the day than when you started. And so the following day, you've got more of it to give away. So you give it away again. And you keep giving it away. And the more you give away, the more you get back. And I'm going to prove this to you in a few minutes. Okay, we're going to do a quick exercise. Okay. When we have somebody leave us or something happens and we have a broken heart, we go, I never want to feel this way again. Now, it's not love that's hurt you. It's the absence of love that's hurt you. So if we seal our heart up then and we go, right, nobody's going to get in again, it won't break my heart, you actually now have a broken heart for the rest of your blooming life. Okay? The only purpose in having a heart is to send out love and joy. When we send out love and joy, we keep getting it back. If somebody comes in again and hurts us, that's because we're not looking for the clues. We didn't learn anything from the last one. If you've had 10 partners and they've all cheated on you, this does not mean that the opposite sex are cheats. It means your selection criteria draws you to the bad person. The one who's a bit cheeky. The one who seems to be more exciting. And there's a really good reason they seem more exciting is because if you get a good, stable person in your life, you don't have to think about what are they up to, right? You know they'll be there when you go home and things like that. You know they'll be there for you whenever you need them. Whereas somebody who you're never sure when they're going to turn up, where they're going to be, you're constantly thinking about them. And we mistake this for love. It's not love. Right? You just pick, you're picking, it's your selection process that wants altering. You don't want to seal your heart up. Because you're locking in that hurt. Right? We need an open heart, but we need to be a bit more discriminatory about giving away this one heart that we've got. Right? Give out as much love as you can. Give out unconditional love to everybody you meet. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's everything that will benefit from you. Right, we're going to do an exercise now. It's just a few moments. I'm going to get you to all relax. So just put down anything you've got in your hands. Uncross your legs. Put your hands on your knees or something. Just find a nice, comfortable position. This is an exercise I did just over a year ago, and it's sending out love and joy out into the world. If you're all right with that, then continue. And I did this just over a year ago, sent love and joy out into the world when I was sat on my own at one of these events, not many people about, sent love and joy out into the world, opened my eyes, and the most beautiful woman walked into my life, and I've been with her ever since, and that's Trudy at the back of the room. And it's the most wonderful relationship I've ever had. So, this is how you get it. Okay, so, take a few deep breaths for me. And just notice that your shoulders drop down when you let the breath out. And just enjoy that nice, relaxed feeling. And as you start to relax, I want you to think of somebody or something that you have total unconditional love for. Right? I say anything. Some of you might have a pet that you absolutely have unconditional love for, and that's absolutely fine. And you might not have anybody in your life at the moment that you feel unconditional love for. So just feel that unconditional love. And as you relax, just search for that in your body where that feels. Just get that feeling in your body. And as you focus in on that feeling and that difference in your body from that unconditional love, I just want you to magnify that unconditional love. Double it now. And double it again. And then just hone in on that feeling that's inside you, that feeling of unconditional love. And just imagine it like molecules all quite tight together. And just start to swirl it in any direction you like. If it's already swirling, swirl it around in the same direction. Just swirl it around and start to let the molecules come further and further apart. And just feel it filling up the whole of your body. As it expands and expands, as it swirls around, just feel it pushing up until it's really tight under your skin. And as it's tight under your skin, I want you to imagine and hold on to it until you can't hold on to it any longer. It's actually filled your body up now, and it's bursting to come out. And as it does, I want you to let it out into the room, let that unconditional love out into the room. And you'll notice that you actually had it amplified by everybody else in the room, then I could certainly feel it. So now spread it out across the whole of the showground, across the whole of Newark, the county, the whole of the UK. Just keep spreading that unconditional love. And see it heading off now over the seas and into all four corners of the world. And as you see it heading off, just notice that everybody it touches, it affects and just increases the love and joy that they're sending out. So this is magnifying and magnifying and magnifying as it goes round the world. Just imagine yourself as a tiny little person on the top of the world and it going off in every direction, and the gravity's pulling it down now, and it's gone past 8 billion people now, and they're all joining in. As it comes round now, and it's coming back up the each side of the world, and it's coming back into this room, and it fills you up with love and joy, magnified time after time after time. I just want you to touch one finger onto your temple and just hold on to that feeling for a short while. Just feel that wonderful feeling of love. And as soon as it subsides, just let go of your finger off your temple. Okay. Right, back into the room. Okay, this is an exercise you can do for yourself at any time. It's all about putting yourself in that mode. You'll actually find that your chemicals have changed in this moment, that you feel different. Who's changed those chemicals? Not me. You are in charge of your own chemical factory. You can either carry on with this sad feeling that you feel and join in with it, or go, why am I sad? Oh my goodness me, I'm always sad, and join in with it. Or you can say, I'm sad now, that's because I've got the wrong chemicals. Right, what can I do that will make me happy? The trouble is, when we get depressed, it's almost like a self-defeating thing. Is we know that we could break out of it if we want to, but we feel we ought to be depressed for a while. We feel we ought to. We deserve to be depressed for a while. And then we stay in it for some unknown reason. We don't break out of it. There's a brilliant exercise you can do first thing in the morning. And I'm not going to fully demonstrate it because you look silly while you're doing it. But put some music on, something like Happy. Everybody know Happy? I'm happy and I know it. Room Without a Roof or something. Anyway, you put that on. And what you do is you allow your body to do the movement. And it's a little dance you do. And I'm going to have to do a little bit to demonstrate it. But you put this brilliant music on, anything that makes you happy. And you start with your hands and you just let your hands move about and do whatever they want to do. And then you'll notice that your arms start to join in anyway. So allow your arms to join in. And then your shoulders. And then bring your body in. And then let your legs moving. And then bring in your head. And just do whatever your body wants to do. Don't do particular dance movements or whatever. Just allow it to do that. And the record will be on for like 3 minutes. It will set you up for the day with so many good chemicals that you're in for a good day, whatever happens then. Because it's not what happens to us in life, it's how we deal with it, it's how we think about it. And if you're thinking of anything, if you think in a negative way about it, that's the very thing you'll attract into your life. Are people queued up outside there or what? No?
Ten to.
One quick last exercise if you want it. Yeah, okay. Think of something sad or something you would like to get rid of. Some thought that's process that's in your head at the moment. Pop your hand out for me. Okay. Imagine you've got negative written across the palm of your hand. Take that thing out of your head and put it into the palm of your hand. Cup your hand if you need to hold it. And now give it a colour. Give it a shape. Bounce your hand up and down, give it a weight. Feel it as though it's physically there. Texture, colour, weight, shape, size. Anything you need to do to make that a physical reality. And that's a negative thing. Right, what I want you to do now is throw it as hard as you can. Throw it away. Okay, pop your hand out again. I'd like you to try and get it back there in the same format it was before. You might notice now it's not affecting you so much and the colour's gone a bit and it's lighter and everything else, but just put it out there, do what you can with it, get it on your hand. As soon as you can feel that it's real, throw it away. Come on, throw it as hard as you can. Right, hand out, put it on there, throw it away. Hand out, put it on there, throw it away. Hand out, put it on there, throw it away. Hand out, put it on there, throw it away. Hand out, put it on there, throw it away. Hand it out, put it on there, throw it away. Okay, put your hand out. Now, can you find it again? Is it still there? Anybody still got it? Is it anything like it was before? No. Okay. This is how your mind works. Whatever you think about appears real. There is nothing about a thought that is real, whether it's good, bad or indifferent. This is why we have a conscious brain, is to decide what we want to work on, what we want to appear in our lives. So when you think of something you think, I'd rather not have this, then think of the exact opposite. What do I want? If I don't want this, if I don't want pain in my back, what do I want? I want a nice, relaxed muscles in my back. I want a wonderful feel. I want to feel well. Right? Isn't that good to think about feeling well? If you're worried about feeling ill, you're going to bring illness on. So isn't it nice to think about feeling well and enjoying it? We have thoughts every day. Most of them we throw away. For some unknown reason, we stuck with the ones that are painful to us. And we treat them as though they're more real than any other. And they aren't. No thoughts are real. It's only what you do with thoughts that become real. I've been Stephen Blake. You've been a wonderful audience. Thank you very much. If you want to come see me on the stand, please do so. I'm giving a talk tomorrow. It's an entirely different subject. So thank you. Okay. Okay.